Well, as we know, when we left Mitzrayim, we didn't take the direct route. We didn't go express. Kadosh Baruch Hu took us a slightly, somewhat circuitous route. V'lo nocham elokim derech eretz pelishtim. Ki korofu, ki, even though, that would be the closer path, the more direct path. Ki omar elokim, for Hashem said, pen yinachem ha'am b'rosam nechama v'shavu mitzrayma. Perhaps they'll reconsider when they see war. They'll go back to Mitzrayim. There is a fascinating comment of the Ksav Sofer. It's a very interesting phraseology. Pen yinachem ha'am, linachem is to reconsider, to regret. Bir'osa mochama, when they see war, v'shavu mitzrayma, they'll go back to Mitzrayim. Simple understanding, I believe, the common understanding, is that when the Jewish people first meet war, they'll be scared and they will hightail it back to Egypt, more familiar surroundings. The Ksav Sofer has a fascinating interpretation. For if this is the case, then perhaps the Pasuk might have said, instead of Pen Yinachem Ha'am, which means to reconsider, which is a somewhat ponderous expression and seems to be something of a euphemism for perhaps they will be scared, Bir'osam l'chama, when they see war, also slightly euphemistic. When people are attacked, that's not called seeing war. That's called being attacked. So this expression, they will reconsider when they see war. So again, the common notion is that they will be filled with fear when they have their first war. But the Ksav Sofer says, no. One thing we find, with all of the confrontations and all of the retributions and the comeuppance between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Mitzrim and the Jewish people, we never find the Jewish people in any way exacted their own martial retribution against the Egyptians, even when they could. And there may be a number of reasons for this. But amongst them is the fact that they had no idea how. They'd never been trained in warfare. They left with weapons. They had no idea what to do with them. The Chamushim Alu B'nai Yisrael. When did they ever have a war? They wouldn't know how. So they left. But what if they enter a war zone? Not a war against them. The Plishtim are always fighting with each other. And they have their first exposure to the way a war is fought. Pen Yinachem Ha'am, they may regret. Regret what? Why didn't we do this before we left Egypt? Bir'osa mochama, when they see how to fight a war, we should have did this before we go. B'shavu Mitzrayim, Pen Yinachem, they may regret having left so quickly. That's a very interesting interpretation, and it is sensitive to these very, as we said, euphemistic expressions, to reconsider and to see war. But in any case, none of that is for the Jewish people. It's not appropriate for them. They need to focus on getting to Eretz Yisrael, not going back to Eretz Mitzrayim for any reason. Vayasev Elokim es ha'am derech ha'med vayamsef. And Hashem takes the nation in a circuitous route. Vayasev saviv through the Yamsuf, towards the Yamsuf, for reasons that, of course, we know. That's where the Egyptians are to meet their fate. There is a very interesting medrash that relates to these words, Vayasev Elokim es ha'am. Hashem took the people round. Says the medrash, Mikan omru, afilu oni shebi Yisrael, even someone who is poor, al yochel belel Pesach ad she yosef, he shouldn't eat and drink on Pesach night, on Seder night, until he reclines, ad she yosef. The medrash has drawn a line between the word Vayasev Elokim and a person who reclines, ad she yasev. The question is, what does one thing have to do with the other? I think that we have numerous other reasons as to why we recline on Seder night. And what's it got to do with the fact that we took the long way out of Egypt? Especially as, if we're medaktik, and we should be medaktik, these two words are not actually the same. They may be ultimately related, but they're not directly related, because the word vayasev in the beginning of our parsha is from the word saviv, as we said, to take a circuitous route. The word lahasev is to recline. When people recline, that's rather different. That's mesubim, but that's not saviv. So it's a very interesting relationship that's being formed. And Mefarshim explain that the message is for afilu oni shebi Yisrael, even the poor amongst Israel, even those that are lacking in difficult circumstances. They may be the ones inclined to think that they have less to celebrate. We came out of Egypt, but am I that much better off here? I don't know. I hope so, but I'm not sure. I have what to complain about in my present circumstances. The beginning of B'Shalach teaches us that the present circumstance is rarely to be judged in and of itself. For in fact, the Jewish people, as they left Mitzrayim, their present circumstance, as they were led in a circuitous route, was also not to their benefit. It was not to their advantage. They had no notion of what was coming, and therefore all they see is that they're going around in circles, and they consider themselves to be lost and heading the wrong way, perhaps in a bad direction. They didn't have that broader vision, they didn't have the broader picture that what is currently a difficult circumstance for them is ultimately for a greater outcome. And this is a vision that everyone needs on Pesach, and no one more than the Oni Shebi Yisrael. His current circumstance is somewhat limited, somewhat lacking. He never knows whether this wrong turn, which he sees as an essential flaw, is part of a greater good for him. So he should take heart from Vayasev. Hashem led the Jewish people around, and at the time they didn't see it to being to their advantage, but ultimately it led them to Geula Shelema, so to the Oni Shebi Yisrael. In fact, we should note, and this the Netziv points out, that the reason given in the beginning of B'Shalach, if we would ourselves ask the question, why did Hashem lead them in this circuitous route by the Yamsuf? Why did he not take them directly to Eretz Yisrael? Well, we know what the Pasuk says, but there's more to it than that, which we know from elsewhere in the Torah. The Pasuk says that they shouldn't go back to Egypt. It shouldn't be too easy for them to go back when they see war, whatever that means. But there's another reason which finds immediate realization in this week's Parsha. They had to go by the Yam Suf because that's where the Egyptians will meet their fate. The judgment of the Egyptians hasn't finished yet. The final Don Anochi is in the Yam Suf. So it's very interesting because the Pasuk, as it explains to us why they didn't go directly to Eretz Yisrael, has given one of two reasons. And there may yet even be more reasons. We need to consider the fact that already in Parshas Shemos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has told Moshe that when the Jewish people leave Mitzrayim, they'll receive the Torah in Har Sinai. You can't receive the Torah in Har Sinai if you don't go to Har Sinai. And if you go directly to Eretz Yisrael, you may miss Har Sinai. So there's a lot of factors in the equation. And the only one that's mentioned is Kikarov, who, you see war, you'll go back. Why does the Pasuk mention less than the full picture? But what's also interesting is, if we look at the first pasuk carefully, "Vayhi b'shalach paro es ha'am," when Paro sent the nation forward, "V'lo nacham elokim derech eretz pelishtim ki karofu," Hashem didn't lead them directly, for the derech eretz pelishtim was too direct. "Ki amar elokim." What is the meaning of those words, "Ki amar elokim"? And what's behind the question is the pasuk has already described what Hashem did do or didn't do, then it merely needs to give the explanation. The Pasuk should have said, "Lo nacham elokim derech eretz plishtim," Hashem didn't lead them the direct route. "Pen yinachem ha'am b'erosim acham." Why? Because "ki amar elokim" seems to be an extraneous phrase. And in fact, the Netziv in the Hamak Dover explains that what the Pasuk is telling us is that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said was not everything. There were more reasons that are to be found in the first pasuk. The first pasuk is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, what they were told, but there was more to it. But then that begs the question, of course, why did Hashem not tell them everything? But the answer, says the Netziv, is based on something that we've met a couple of weeks ago. Namely, when Moshe says, I will come to Bnei Yisrael, they'll ask me, what is your name? And Hashem answers, Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh. Say to the Bnei Yisrael, Eheyeh Shlachani Alechem. What is the meaning of the name Eheyeh, and why is it featured twice the first time round, and once the second time round? Originally, it's Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh. And then the second time round, tell Bnei Yisrael, Eheyeh Shlachani Alechem. And the Gemara, Rashi quotes from the Gemara in Brachos and Daftes, that Eheyeh literally means I will be, and specifically means I will be with them. I will be with them in this galus. And Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh means it's the same God that will be with them in this galus will be with them in subsequent galios. And at that point, Moshe objects and says, famous expression, Daya Letzara Beshata. Let's take the Tzoras one at a time. Meaning, they're currently in Mitzrayim. They need to be told of the Geula. They do not need to be told about subsequent Golios. That's hardly going to put them in a state of good cheer. So the good news is that Hashem has been with you in this Golos. And there's more good news. He'll be with you in subsequent Golios as well. They may not have the breadth of perspective to see that as good news just yet. And therefore, the actual message to Bnei Yisrael is Eheyeh Shlachani, just the one Eheyeh, I'll be with you in this goddess, and Daya Letzara Beshata. Indeed, Hashem originally told Moshe the full name, but for Bnei Yisrael, it was only the one Eheyeh. Daya Letzara Beshata. So it's fascinating to consider that as Bnei Yisrael leave Mitzrayim, they don't know exactly, or more correctly, they don't know fully why they're being led on the route that they are. As far as if they ask, they will be given an answer. And it's correct, but it's not the whole answer. The answer they'll be given is, if you take the direct route, maybe you'll see war, you'll come back, ill-advised. That's acceptable to them. Ki amar Elokim, that's what Hashem said. Implying, there is another answer that Hashem did not say, which was equally part of the equation. But the Bnei Yisrael couldn't know about it at the time. And that is, you're being taken this way in order to drown the Mitzrayim. Because the Jewish people, as they leave Egypt, they have no notion that the Mitzrayim will be running after them. And it's not kedai for them to know yet. They don't leave with the expectation that in 7 days' time, Egypt will follow. They're rather surprised when they see Mitzrayim. And it's, again, because of the principle of Daya Letzara Beshata. As Bnei Yisrael leave B'yad Ramah, they leave on the first day Pesach. So if they hear the news that enjoy your freedom, and don't forget, in 6 days' time, the entire Egyptian army will be chasing after you, but it will have a good outcome, and in the meanwhile, enjoy Pesach. So that's Daya Letzara Beshata. And that's the reason why the Pasuk stresses that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said one of the reasons, because there's another reason left unsaid. Which means that Bnei Yisrael are going in circles, they don't have a full understanding as to why it is. But ultimately, they, looking back, they see exactly why they needed to be at each stage. And the lesson, as we said, as the Medrash puts it, from the Sivuvim of Bnei Yisrael when they left, to the Misubim of everyone in whatever situation they may find themselves, even on Ishevi Yisrael. Now, I'd like to talk for a few moments, about Kriyas Yamsuf itself. And it's important, as we get a full picture, to remind ourselves that we didn't shine through at every moment of Kriyas Yamsuf. There is the famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos in the fifth parak, Asara Nisyonos Nisu Avaseinu Es HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bamidbar. So we tested HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, 10 times. And what that means is that we expressed doubt as to whether he could or would take care of us or save us. And that's the Mishnah. In fact, it's a pasuk. Vayinasu osi ze eser pa'amim. In fact, it's the only list of the tens in Pirkei Avos, which is also a pasuk, which leads some commentators to ask, well, so then why is it a Mishnah? I mean, if you read the Chumash, the pasuk says 10 times. The others, you either have to count or you don't know. But in any case, the Mishnah does not detail what the 10 sionos were, the 10 trials that with which we tried HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the Gemara does in Maseches Erechin and Daf Tesvav Amud Beis. And the Gemara breaks them up into sets, and two of the 10 were by the Yam Suf. Shnayim Bayam. Okay, two. Now we know one of them because it's in the pasuk. The way the Gemara phrases it, achas biyiridosam va'achas ba'aliyosam. One as we went in, and one as we went out. What was the test? What did we say that was objectionable when we went in? Well, as the pasuk says, we complained hamibli en kevar b'mitzrayim lekachtan labus b'midbar. We thought we were doomed. We thought that Hashem wasn't going to save us. So then it's just a shortage of graves in Egypt that brought us to here, which was wrong to have said. So that's number one. But what is number two? Ba'aliyasam. And in the pasuk, all you see is az yashir. All you see is exaltation. Says the Gemara, number two is that the Jewish people said, okay, fine, we've gone through the Yam Suf, but where are the Egyptians? As surely as we've come out over here, so presumably they are also somewhere nearby. They'll be somewhere to the right or to the left, and we're still in trouble. Until the bodies of the Egyptians then started floating up, and then they realized, no, the Egyptians were not a threat anymore. Now, this second Nisayon needs to be understood. And Tosus voices the question. You see, you can't compare the complaining on the way into the Yam Suf to the complaining on the way out of the Yam Suf. On the way into the Yam Suf, so no one's ever seen Kriyas Yam Suf before, no one knows what to expect. They're not expecting a miracle, so they complain, we're doomed. It wasn't correct, but it was, they were afraid. But the achas ba'aliyosam, the complaint on the way up, what are they saying? They're saying, we've gone through the Yam Suf, and here we are on the other side, but the Egyptians presumably have also ended up somewhere, and they're still going to chase after us. Says the Tosfos, what do you have to believe in order to be afraid of that? You have to believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu opened the Yam Suf for you, led you through it, allowed the Egyptians also to go through it, deposited them, gave them an exit, which you can't see, slightly to the left or slightly to the right, and the moral of the story is you're still in trouble. I mean, it takes so much emuna for that apikorsus that it's impossible to fathom. This is not fear. I mean, this is paranoia. To believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu also allowed the Egyptians to go through, he didn't hold the Dead Sea open for you, so the whole thing was for nothing. It's a malach ha-shenetzucha legufa. I mean, that's conspiracy minded. How do we understand such a... So we're here, they're probably somewhere near. That means Hashem held the Red Sea open for them as well, just to torment you again? I mean, he's on your side, he's not on their side. So, this question brings the Tosfos to consider what we refer to when we talk about Kriyas Yam Suf. Our notion of Kriyas Yam Suf, I think it's the standard and common understanding is, well, what happened? However it was affected, but the wind blew and the sea split, so here we are on one side in trouble, led safely through to the other side, and the Egyptians followed us, but the sea closed in before they were able to get to the other side, and thus we were saved. According to a number of Rishonim, and as we will see, it is explicit in one place in the words of Chazal, it seems that that is not what happened. Going through, what we call going through the Yam Suf, did not involve going through in the sense of starting on one side and then making it through to the other side. But rather, we entered into the Yam Suf, but the derech in through the sea actually took the form of a semicircle, whereby we entered but then began to arc around. which means that we ended up on the same side that we went in, just a certain distance down the line. Now, should we ask the question, well, why would that be so? The answer is very simple. The tachlis of going through the Yam Suf is essentially to lead the Egyptians to their doom. We only need to go as far into the Yam Suf that will allow them entirely to enter as well, and then there's no need to traverse the entire cross-section of the Yam Suf. It's possible then to return, and there they are. Now, there are a number of Rishonim, as we said, who understand Kriyas Yam Suf in this way. The Rambam, in his commentary to Pirkei Avos in the Perush HaMishnayos, explains thus, that we went in, we arced around, and came out on the same side. And this is also the opinion of the Ibn Ezra. And what's very interesting is, this leads us also to a Loshon HaKodesh point. Because the Pasuk says, Vayavo bnei Yisrael betoch hayam beyabasha. Now, the question is, what is the meaning of betoch? And here, we have to be very careful as we translate. Perhaps we would be inclined to translate in the midst of the sea, betoch hayam. The question is, does the midst mean the middle? And here, the Ibn Ezra states that given the way that he understands, as the Rambam and others, Kriyas Yam Suf happened, we didn't get anywhere near the middle of the Yam Suf. So as the Pasuk says that we came betoch hayam, it doesn't mean midst in the middle, it means inside. But it doesn't have to be the middle. That's toch. And it's interesting to consider a very well-known Rashi in light of this. When I saw this Ibn Ezra, the thought that occurred to me is that Rashi disputes this point with the Ibn Ezra. How and where? Well, in Parshas Bereishis. For the Torah tells us that of all the trees that were in Gan Eden, so it describes the Eitz HaChaim betoch hagan. Betoch hagan. How would you translate? In the midst of the garden. Okay. Rashi explains, quoting Unkelus, b'mitzius ginsa, in the middle of the garden, meaning in the center. Betoch means in the center. So that's not what the Ibn Ezra says. The Ibn Ezra says toch means in the center, not necessarily, anywhere, even on the edge is also, the periphery is also in. But Rashi says betoch means the center. Do we have a machlokus? But subsequently, I came to understand that there is no machlokus. Even Rashi agrees that the word toch doesn't have to mean the center. The reason why Rashi comments that the Eitz HaChaim betoch hagan is in the center of the garden, I think is very simple. Because all the trees were in the garden. And that we've been told already. The Pasuk says, Hashem placed all the trees in the garden. So if they're all in the garden, and that I know already, and then the Eitz HaChaim is singled out as referred to as betoch hagan, so if all the trees are in, and one of them is stated as being in, it means in. Then Rashi says it means in the center. And this is very interesting because sometimes a word can have a broad connotation unless the broad connotation exists before the word comes, and then it assumes a specific translation. And this is something that occurs quite frequently. And therefore, in the Yam Suf, when the Pasuk states that we entered betoch hayam, there's no reason to assume that Rashi would dispute and say that we went to the center and beyond, but rather, as Ibn Ezra says, into the Yam Suf. Interestingly, this is also the understanding of the Radak. The Radak in his commentary to Tehillim, Kuf Lamed Vav. And there, the Radak, not only have we explained why it's sufficient just to enter into a semicircle within the Yam Suf, but the Radak demonstrates it from the Psukim. How so? In the beginning of our Parsha, in Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Kaf, so where are we as we are about to enter into the Yam Suf? So the Pasuk says, Vayisu Misukos, so that's the whole discussion in itself. First time we met Sukkos was on Pesach. So we came from Ramses to Sukkos, but then from Sukkos, Vayachanu ve'esam. So we encamped in a place called Esam. Okay. Now, this, of course, is also recapped in Parshas Maaseh, when it goes through all of the stations of Bnei Yisrael. And there, and that's in the end of Bamidbar, Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Vav, it says, we went from Sukkos, Vayachanu ve'esam. Fine. So our entry into the Yam Suf was from a place called Esam. Why is this significant? Because in two psukim's time, that is to say, two psukim further from that, Perek Lamed Gimel Pasuk Ches of Bamidbar, it describes Kriyas Yam Suf and says, "Vayavru betoch hayam hamidbara." So we went in the Yam, through the Yam, back to the desert. Vayelchu derech shloshes yomim b'midbar esam. And we were 3 days traveling in Midbar Esam. Says Radak, but if you started in Midbar Esam and then you went through the sea, you crossed here on the other side, you're somewhere else. Rather, says Radak, no. We entered from Midbar Esam and we came out to Midbar Esam because we came out on the same side that we entered. And moreover, says Radak, this is the connotation of the reference in Tehillim to Kriyas Yam Suf, which we say in the Tehillim Kuf Lamed Vav, the 26 Kila Olam Chastos. When we talk about Kriyas Yam Suf, the Pasuk says, Legozer Yam Suf Ligzarim. Now, literally, that means to tear the Yam Suf into strips. But why? As if to say, how many strips are there? Every time there's a gezerah, that means there's a cut. How many cuts were there? Well, if it's simply the one pass through, that's not gezerim, that's one cut. And moreover, what you have on either side are not really strips. If we translate gezerim as strips, which perhaps is we're influenced by the way it's commonly translated, but two sides of a sea are not strips. It's for this reason, by the way, that we have the famous statement of Chazal. Each of the Shvatim went through their own route, and they were divided by a mechitza, really, of water. And that's based on this pasuk of Ligozeyam Suf Ligzarim, because that means those are strips. Those are 12 strips of water. That's where it comes from. But the Radak explains that the Alderach HaPshat, I suppose, that this expression, Legozei Amsuf Ligzarim, is support for the understanding that we actually, our route was a semicircle. And I wasn't sure why this is until it occurred to me, perhaps what the Radak means to say is that if it's a direct route, it's one cut. But if it's a semicircle, so then as the path keeps on being charted, so the cut goes in a different direction. I mean, lahavdil, but as if one would cut a semicircle, it's really a sum of many small cuts. Every time you change direction, it's a new cut. Every time the angle goes a little bit more. And therefore, it was a collection of miniature cuttings. That's ligzarim. And that's what allowed the trail to arc around to where we came in. So that's, I believe, is what the Radak means to say by adducing that pasuk of Legozei Amsuf Ligzarim for this. So we have on board a number of very respectable Rishonim. We have the Rambam, we have the Ibn Ezra, we have the Radak. And as we mentioned, it is a Medrash Seichel Tov, which states, an Acharei HaDvarim Ha'ele, it's really in two or three lines, Om Rabbi Seinu, Lo Avru Yisrael Es Hayam Misafa LaSafa. The Jewish people did not traverse the sea from one side to the other. Ela Lehatbia Et Mitzrayim. The goal was purely primarily to drown the Egyptians. Nichnisnu Yisrael Mitzadzeh. So they entered this side. Uvo Hatzad Ba'atzmo Yotsu Lamidbar. And on the very same side, they came back into the desert. Kimin Keshes, like a rainbow. So that's now, in very succinct terms, the words of the Medrash on this. And the final Rishon that we need to consider, who also subscribes to the same side theory, are the Tosfos. You see, Tosfos, which is really where we began, we ourselves let us come out on the same side that we began. The Tosfos had a question. The Gemara says that when the Jewish people came up from the Yam Suf, they're complaining. They said, okay, very nice, Kriyas Yam Suf, we went through, but we're here, presumably they're somewhere yet around, and they'll attack us again. And Tosfos says, well, what do you mean? You believe that Hashem allowed them to get through the Yam Suf, but somehow you can't see them and they're still a threat? How can that be? Says Tosfos, no. On the contrary, the Jewish people did not believe that Hashem had allowed the Mitzrayim to go through the Yam Suf. They also did not believe that the Mitzrayim had gone into the Yam Suf, because if they were the Mitzrayim, they wouldn't go in. In other words, there were two great chidushim that happened to the Jewish people on that day. Chiddush number one is Hashem split the Yam Suf. Chiddush number two is they came to realize that the Egyptians actually followed them in. And this becomes one of the biggest questions of Parshas Beshalach. Why would the Egyptians follow them in? In other words, at a certain point, you know, enough is enough. They've done their best, but it has to reach a stage when the sea is split open and the Jews go through. That's really the time to call it an innings and to go home. Because for the Egyptians to believe that Hashem would hold the sea open for them as well, that's something of a bloated self-estimation. And no one of the Jewish people imagined that the Egyptians would follow them in. But lo and behold, they did. But why did they? So the simplest answer about Derech HaPshat is that the Egyptians didn't realize that they were going into the Yam Suf. Because according to many Mefarshim, what happened with the Kriyas Yam Suf, first of all, it's pitch dark. They can't see anything because the Amud Anan is in front of them. So the Amud Eish lights the path for the Jewish people. They can see everything. But then it's followed by the Amud Anan, the cloud, which cannot be penetrated by light. And the Egyptians can't see anything. They have no idea where they're going. Generally speaking, the way a person knows that they've entered into the sea is that they feel the sea. If it's been split, and moreover, according to many Mefarshim, the level of the seabed rose. Now, this was for the benefit of the Jewish people. It says, Vayavo'u betochayam. It doesn't say, Vayerdu letochayam, which even sailors are called Vayerde hayam, because the seabed goes down. But the seabed came up, and therefore, no one knows. They don't know where they are, but the last thing that would occur to them is that they're in the middle of the sea. All of this changes when HaKadosh Baruch Hu lets them know where they are, and by that time it's too late. But the Jewish people have no idea that they're being followed. It's amazing. And therefore, says the Tosfos, once we understand that the Jewish people came out the same side they went in, we can at least understand their fear. Their fear is not that the Egyptians have followed them in and are still there. Their fear is the Egyptians obviously haven't followed them in. So if we came out on a different side, the sea divides us. But if we came out on the same side, nothing divides us. We're on the same side of the sea, just a couple of kilometers down, so we're back where we started. That's what the Gemara means when their second complaint was, we're here, they're there, and we're back where we started. So it doesn't make it a correct thing to have said, but at least we understand why they thought that. And then, as Vayar Yisrael, as Mitzrayim Mesas Vasayam, the great revelation that the Egyptians had indeed followed them in to their demise. So this is a very significant Parshanut discussion about Kriyas Yam Suf itself, just to understand the Psukim and the relevant Ma'amari Chazal, very central to Parshas Beshalach. Now, I'd like to take a look for the final section at Shiras Hayam, at the beginning of Shiras Hayam. We'll begin at the beginning. I don't think we'll get that far, but we have to make a start. Oz Yashir Moshe, Perik Tesvav Pasuk Aleph. Oz Yashir Moshe, then Moshe, Ebene Yisrael, sang a Sashir Azuz Lashem. They sang this song, Vayomu Leimor. Ashir Lashem Ki Go'o Ga'ah. I will sing to Hashem, Ki Go'o Ga'ah. The simplest translation is that he is elevated above the haughty. Sus Verofo Ramavaya. The horse and the rider, he threw them into the sea. He hurled them into the sea. Now, with regards to the words Az Yashir, the usage of the future, even though it's describing a past event, so Rashi has two comments here. So the first, Al Derech HaPshat, it uses the future because it's a reference to Moshe having the thought of singing. Az Ola Bedato Sheyashir. That's when Moshe decided that he was going to sing, and that's in the future. Looking back, this is when he had occurred to him that he should be singing. Oz Yashir Moshe and Bnei Yisrael. That's how Derech HaPshat. Allah Belibo Sheyashir Shira. The thought emerged in his heart to sing Shir. And Rashi brings other examples where a past event is referred to in terms of what the person then decided that he would do. Oz Yashir. Rashi then, however, gives a second parish, and it's Al Derech HaDrash, clearly. And that is that this is, it's an allusion to the future. It really is. The Drash takes the future, Kipshuto, Az Yashir. He will sing. When? In the future, Az Yashir. That's a remes to Tchias HaMeitzim. Moshe Rabbeinu will yet sing Az Yashir. So these two perishim complement each other. The Pshat is a past event about the decision, and the Drash is the song itself will take place in the future. I think it's fair to say that this pasuk is the central pasuk of the Shira, not only because it comes first, but we find that later on when Miriam takes the women and they have their Shira, it's just this. Shira Lashem Ki Go'o Ga'os Susperach Ramavaya. That's it. And apparently, therefore, this is the essence of Az Yashir, and that all the more behooves us to take a good look at it. For what does it say? Shir Hashem Ki Go'o Ga'ah, Sus Verofa, the horse and the rider, and its rider, Rama Vayam. And Rashi explains, Sus Verofa, meaning that the horse with the rider still on it. Because if the rider wasn't on it, he wouldn't be called the rider, he'd just be called the Mitzri. So, because otherwise he'd be a non-practicing horse rider. So Sus Verofo specifically refers to the Egyptian on the horse. And apparently that's very, very important because Moshe says it's the first thing he says in the Shira. And with Miriam, it's all she says in the Shira. Sus Verofo Mavoya. And apparently it makes all the difference that as the Mitzrim went down as they were riding on their horses. If that wasn't the case, it would be a different experience altogether. But why is it so significant? That we need to know. Now the word Az Yashir, Az, is a very, it's a fascinating word. Because it is the first word of the Shira, but it means then, and it's not qualified. Then, when is then? And there's a fascinating medrash with regards to Az Yashir, because we say in Tehillim, in the Kabbalah Shabbos, and in Hashem Malach Geus Lavesh, Nachon Kisacha Me'az. Hashem's throne is established Me'az, from then. Says the Medrash, Me'az Yashir. In other words, the establishment of Hashem's throne is from when? From Az, but it's a quotation from Az Yashir Moshe. Somehow that's the point of Nachon Kisacha. We need to ponder the words of the Medrash, especially we may ask, is this the first miracle? It's not the first miracle. Is this the first act of retribution against the Egyptians? Also not. There have been 10 Makos. It's been going on for a year already. This is the final. I mean, this is the Makah B'Patish. But how is it that somehow the Egyptians are being punished, but the throne isn't established until now? In a sense, what marks Kriyas Yamsef as different? It's very interesting that the word Az is a focal point in the Medrash from a different angle. Because Moshe has used the word Az, and we say delicately because we're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, we're quoting the Medrash. The Medrash says that Moshe misused the word Az already in the service of the Jewish people. How so? At the end of Parshas Shemos, so he comes back, the first meeting with Paro went very badly. Moshe complains. He suffered because he complained, but he complained on behalf of the Jewish people. It's not a person; it's not his own comfort. He's complaining because the Jewish people are suffering now. More, it seems, because of him. He says, "Ume oz basi al paro daba b'shmecha, hey rala amazeh." From the time they came to Paro to speak in your name, he's dealt wickedly with his people. V'hatzela v'tzaltas l'mecha, and the hatzala hasn't begun at all. So what motivated Moshe, to the extent that we can say, the pain of the Jewish people? But it was considered to be a mistake. Says the Medrash, Be'oz Sarach. With the word Oz, Moshe made a mistake. Be'oz Tikin, and he rectified it with the word Oz. Shene'emar, Oz Yashem Moshe. So what's very interesting, by the way, and this is not commonly noted, the first word of Shira Sayam is Oz. In other words, the opening words, Az Hashem Moshe, Vnei Yisrael, we may have been inclined to take them as introductory words to the Shira, but the Shira doesn't begin until open quotation. So the Pasuk is describing Az Hashem Moshe, Vnei Yisrael, as the Shira, Zot Lashem, Vayimu Lemor, and what did they say? Where, what is the first part of the Shira? Ashir Lashem Ki Go'o Ga'ah. That's not so. The first words of the Shira are not Ashir Lashem. The first words are Az Hashem Moshe. And by the way, one can see it halachically because the Shira Sayam has to be written in a very specific way. If you know how it looks in the Sefer Torah, the half bricks on the full bricks, Ariyah Chagabe Levena, special way that the Shira Sayam is written. That special script begins with the word Az Yashir, because the Shira has begun already. And that's really borne out by the Medrash, that Az is the beginning of the Shira somehow. It's a key word. But why? So, the Sfasemes explains that there is a difference, a marked difference in approach between how the ten plagues worked and how Kriyas Yamsuf worked. Generally speaking, when two enemies are at war, so the way that one wins, emerges victorious, is by systematically weakening and destroying, wherever possible, the enemy. And that's really what happened in Mitzrayim. In other words, the Egyptians in Egypt, they never made a comeback. From the time that it began, it just got worse and worse for them. The most they could do is recuperate. But that's not... They couldn't retaliate, obviously. So from the time that Malchus Dan begins, it's all downhill for Egypt, from 1 till 10. So there's no strength. I mean, there is the delusional strength in the minds of the Egyptians, but there's no actual strength anywhere on their part. But Kriyas Yamsuf has a very different dynamic to it. This final makkah, really, of Kriyas Yamsuf, the Egyptians were actually in full strength until the final moment. In other words, it didn't take the form of weakening them progressively. On the contrary, they galloped in to the Yam Suf, and that's where they met their demise. And in a sense, this accentuates a very different part of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. In that all of their strength, they can be allowed it, and all of their forces, which are ungodly forces and anti-godly forces, are allowed for them on this occasion, and doesn't help them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses their own strength to bring about his results. And that's why we say, both in the first Pasuk and in Miriam Shira, Sus v'rocho rava v'yam. That's why it's so significant that the Mitzrim went down as the riders of the horse. In other words, with full ensemble, fully equipped, fully capable. And that's how they went down. They were allowed to continue on that path, and all of their own forces were ultimately being guided by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, there was a certain lesson learnt at the time of Kriyas Yam Suf. Namely, that there are so many disparate forces in the world. They're contrary to each other. They're certainly seemingly contrary to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plans for the world. And in the end, he is maneuvering them and arranging them and ordering them for his purposes. Says Maharal, this brings us to a new dimension within the word Az, a new insight into the word Az. The word Az is it's a word and it means then. But there's something else. The Torah uses the number 7 to denote plurality or disparity when there's many of something, and especially in all different directions. It's referred to with the number 7. As the Pasuk says in Parshas Kisavo, if things are going well for the Jewish people, their enemies will be dispersed in all directions. B'derech echad yetzu elecha, they may come out to you in one way. U'v'shiva derochim yanusu lefanecha, in 7 ways they'll run away from you. Shiva derochim, 7 paths. And that represents the way of the world, right? That's how many days there are in the week before it's another week again. And yet the lesson of Kriyas Yam Suf is that for all the many and varied and competing forces in the world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is behind all of them and is guiding all of them. And that is contained within the word Oz, because the word Oz is a Zion with an Aleph behind it. And that communicates the message that for all the Zion, for all of the Shiva Drachim, which represents the multiplicity, and the so, there's so much going on in all different directions, the Aleph behind the Zion, the Shir begins Az Yashir. The one behind all of those 7, behind all of those forces, Sus V'rochvo, so be it. That will also serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu's purpose at the end of the day. And this is a message, interestingly, that the Jewish people can take with them for all generations, that beyond what they could take from the Eser Makos. Because if the Eser Makos represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu systematically weakening the Egyptians, so then that's not something that the Jewish people can necessarily get chizuk from in Golos unless they see it begin to happen again, which it doesn't often. But the message of Kriyas Yam Suf is the message for Golos. Because in Golos, you're surrounded by the horse and the rider. You're surrounded by all the exiling nations in full strength. So your memories of Eser Makos, they're exceedingly important. But to say that we can see what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did there, and we can see that and expect that's going to happen here, you don't have that yet. But if you've experienced Kriyas Yam Suf, so you're no different than the Jewish people, you in your Golos, and you see that the exiling nation, it's the riders on the horse. It's all powerful. That we've seen before. We saw that's what the Jewish people were followed by into the Yam Suf. And thus, says the Medrash, Nachon Kisacha Me'az, when is Hashem's throne established? These are obviously very abstract concepts, but the idea of Hashem's throne, that is to say, an awareness and appreciation of Hashem's control of the world. Through Eser Makos, the throne isn't established, that is to say that from this point onwards it is set and it is absorbed, not yet in the Eser Makos. Until Az Yashir, until Kriyas Yam Suf, where the blueprint really for further experiences of being chased by the Egyptians with full power, and still they met their demise, that's something that the Jewish people can relate to as they have these similar experiences. That is the archetypical Golos experience. And therefore the throne is established from Az Yashir. And moreover, as much as the full experience of Sus V'Rochvo came in Kriyas Yamsuf, but there was an element that existed within the Eser Makos. How so? In what was there any respect that Paro galloped to his doom in Mitzrayim? There was, in a very subtle way. Namely, the first meeting between Moshe and Paro that went so badly for Moshe, for the Jewish people, Paro emerged victorious. That's what kept him going through the Eser Makos. That's what allowed him to absorb and sustain all the Eser Makos, and he wouldn't relent because he kept on thinking back to that first time when he was victorious and he was sure that he can get it back if he just bides his time, and because otherwise how can one explain it? So the aspect of Sus V'Rochvo, Paro on the horse, Paro all-powerful, is when Paro was allowed to feel all-powerful at the first meeting. And it went badly for the Jewish people, but that means Paro is conceptually galloping to his doom in the next year through the Eser Makos. There's no turning back, because he remembers the glory of that first meeting. And therefore, in its time, and again, we're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, we have to speak carefully, but in its time, the Medrash says, Moshe says, "Umei oz basti el Paro ledaber b'shmecha." From then, I went to Paro and it worked out badly. And that was a mistake. But where is the rectification? The rectification is Az Yashir. And how is that? Because in Az Yashir it was so apparent that all of the what seems initially to be the enemy in full force is really leading them to their destruction. Now Moshe looks back and realizes that's really what happened when the first meeting went badly. And therefore he rectifies the complaint of Me Oz Basi Al Paro with the beginning of the Shir of Az Yashir. So what's fascinating now, what emerges from this understanding of Kriyas Yamsuf is that it's the closest, as an experience, that the Jewish people could have to what they will subsequently experience in Golus. Namely, whatever is happening in the world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is guiding it for his purposes. They never saw it more clearly than they did in Kriyas Yamsuf. And that's why they sing Shira. Shira comes from the word Yashar, actually. The root of Shin Reish means it's Lashir, it's Yashar, because the feeling, or the mood of Shira, that exaltation, is when everything becomes clear, everything becomes apparent, when one can see straight. So when Yashar leads to Shira. Yashar leads to Yashir. And one could almost say, in a sense, that this was a micro-experience of Jewish history, whereby everything seemed to be, you know, against us, and there seemed to be no way out. The enemy was all-powerful, but that's exactly what ultimately led to his demise. And this is something that the Gemara speaks about, because that's really what we're in now. The Gemara says in Maseches Psachim and Daf Nun that there's two types of news in life, and there's good news and bad news, and there's a bracha for both, but it's not the same bracha, because it's not the same type of news. The Gemara says on Besuras Tovas, a person makes a Baruch HaTovah HaMeitiv, and Lo Aleinu, on Besuras Ros, a person makes a bracha, Baruch Dayan Emes. But then, says the Gemara, but in the future, with the vision that we'll have in the future, in a way that it's really impossible to imagine, even the traumatic events, even the difficult events, even the Baruch Dayan Emes events, will look back and make Baruch HaTovah HaMeitiv on them. So there's two types of brachas now. Then in the future, there's only one type of bracha, Baruch HaTovah HaMeitiv. But we should understand very clearly that as much as we know that, and we've received it, and we understand it, and we're looking forward to it, but we can't fool ourselves into thinking that we already see it. The moral of the story is not to say, well, in the future, you'll look back and see all the difficult times of the Jewish people were all for the best, so let's make Baruch HaTovah HaMeitiv already. You can't, because you can't see it. And if you can't see it, you can't say it. Not as a bracha. That's a delusion. So for the time being, we have to respond the way we experience it. But we know that subsequently these things will be seen in a completely different light. In the light, essentially, one could say that they were seen in at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf. That was the closest we came to what looked like certain doom became the ultimate redemption so quickly. It was almost like a it was like an Olam Haba type of experience. And it's fascinating to consider. The Gaon says, the Vilna Gaon, his parish to Sefer Yonah, that whenever Chazal refer to people who go out to sea, and many stories that are about sailors out to sea, it's about life in this world. A person has to navigate it until he gets to dry land on the other side. And in the meanwhile, you're in the sea. But something amazing happened to the Jewish people. They were able to experience being on dry land in the middle of the sea. And that's not normally done. Normally, dry land is on the other side, wherever the other side is, but not in the middle. But the notion of experiencing dry land in the middle of the sea means that one time where we're still very much in Olam Hazeh, and history has yet to happen, and so much will happen, but it was already to be standing on firm ground in the middle of the sea, to be able to see in that experience how things would turn out. And thus, we come back to Rashi's two comments of Az Yashir. The pshat of Az Yashir is that Moshe decided that he would sing. That's the pshat. But then there's a drash. Yashir means Yashir, Kipshuto, in the future, Tchias HaMeisim, this song will come back. So the question is, with the drash, why are we being told that here? How does it connect with what's happening? What will happen in the future will happen in the future, but what's it got to do with the understanding there? Except the point is that the song of the future, we already had a taste of the future in the experience of Kriyas Yamsuf. We already had a micro taste of what history will be like. And therefore, the shira that we originally sang was the first of shiras, and it's pertinent to the Kriyas Yamsuf experience that it carries with it almost the code for the future shira, and that's why the future shira is already referred to al derech hamedrash within the original shira. So these are some perspectives on Az Yashir, which I believe are well worth our reflection. We'll leave it over there.